I'm Hannah Exley, and this is episode 3 of the Globalization Trail, on the backs of Quechua borders. Pack out what you pack in, but not on the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu. There, a porter, most likely an indigenous Quechua man, will pack it for you. Since pack mules were outlawed on the trail, every single sleeping bag, tent, pot, pan, makeup bag, portable charger has been carried on the back of a porter. If you Google Inca Trail porters, you'll be bombarded with blogs by glitzy travel companies exalting their sacrifice and their amazing trekking feats. One proclaims, "Porters, rock stars of the Andes." Others explain that, as Quechua speakers, porters have chronically low self-esteem, a problem that can be remedied with an appropriate tip. But what's really going on here? And how does the labor of these Quechua workers fit in our globalized world? So, what's it like to be a porter? Well, they're hired by travel companies on a trek-by-trek basis, 4 days of an intense hiking at a time, about 10 hours a day. They aren't paid for the cold Andes nights, sometimes spent in dining tents, toilets, or even caves. They're paid about $13 a day, often less. No benefits like health or unemployment insurance. In a travel medicine study, a third of porters describe their health as poor or very poor, quoting injuries on the trail, respiratory infections, kidney problems, colds, and stomach pain due to lack of food. 90% reported regularly falling ill on the trail due to the conditions. Many porters feel mistreated, disrespected, and discriminated against precisely because they are Quechua. They are considered degenerate, inferior, and backward. This could be the source of their chronic low self-esteem. Travel companies, many of them owned by Peru's elite, pressure porters to work for less, to carry more weight, to bring less of their own warm clothes, because there's always someone to fill their place, if they complain, if they're injured on the job, if they fight for their rights. According to the Porter Voice Collective, speaking out against the conditions often means defamation, hush money, or threats of bodily harm. So porters are kind of a perfect example of a flexible informal worker. At times like right now, when the flow of tourists stops, porters are left high and dry without any support from their employers. Recent years have seen porters demand the rights they deserve as workers. Back in 1988, as the tourism industry was taking off, the Peruvian Association of Workers in Adventure Tourism was formed. This is the first time porters were recognized as workers with legitimate rights. The Porter's Law of 2001 set out labor standards, like a maximum weight of 20 kilograms, mandatory rests and time to sleep, sufficient food, kind of basic stuff. This is a big step in providing a legal framework for labor disputes, and a standard companies are expected to follow, even if they don't. Nowadays, the Regional Federation of Porters has more than 7,000 members. Unions are growing in strength and number, and a proposed documentary called Kilometer 82 aims to expose their mistreatment to the world. But despite all this progress, studies suggest that the porters' fight for rights has stagnated. Trucking companies find new and creative ways around the 2001 regulations. Many porters are no better off now than before. Researcher Alexandra Arellano says this issue goes back to supply and demand. There are too many porters desperate for work, and not enough tourists willing to pay them fairly. Porter's dignity, she says, is constantly under attack by the industry, its affluent customers, and the forces of neoliberalism. What do international labor laws have to say about the porter situation? For starters, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights states that everyone has a right to join a union, to just and favorable conditions of work, and to an earning, ensuring an existence of human dignity for themselves and their family. The UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples states that individuals have the right not to be subjected to any discriminatory conditions of labor relating to employment or salary. And the International Labor Association states that no one can be discriminated against, period. Quechua workers are discriminated against daily in terms of the work available to them, their salary, mistreatment from companies, mestizo guides, and tourists alike. Let's talk about what's going on symbolically here. What does this all really mean? First of all, what about the fact that, after mules were outlawed on the trail, porters took their place, becoming literal pack animals? Congresswoman Rebeca Cruz Tevez expressed this really well when she said, quote, In this 21st century, we have humans treated like load-carrying beasts, working in subhuman conditions. End quote. The more wealthy tourists flock to Peru, the more the GDP grows, the more Quechua workers carry, the more they sacrifice their health and their bodies for an unlivable wage. If we think back to some Latin American history, none of this is new. Since the time of conquest, through the encomienda and hacienda systems, the economy of the New World has been built on the backs of indigenous laborers. Laborers who were violently oppressed and taught that their bodies, their ability to labor for their masters, was their only bargaining chip. Are these terrible times so far away, really? Researcher Alexandra Arellano states that, quote, "Tourism offered the Quechua peasants an employment opportunity that did not require them to be educated, skilled, speak English or Spanish. All they needed was their physical ability to work under arduous, high-altitude conditions." End quote. All they needed was their bodies and their ability to labor. In an ironic twist of fate, Quechua porters, descendants of the Inca, are almost always prohibited from entering Machu Picchu. Hundreds of treks, but for years and years, each one cut short before the final destination. This is a tragic legacy. There's no question that porters are fighting for their rights, for justice, just like countless other indigenous groups navigating the tides of globalization. What would this justice look like? It would look like respect, like obeying international labor laws, like fair pay for hard work, like ownership of the booming tourist industry, a say in what is happening to and on their land. It would mean the Quechua principle of aini, or reciprocity, or looking after the land and all its inhabitants so that it, in turn, would look after us. It would mean international solidarity with not only other indigenous movements, but with oppressed and mistreated workers around the world. Because, as the Porter's Voice Collective states with conviction, porter rights are worker rights, and worker rights are human rights. A glimpse into the life of the Inca Trail's porters offers a glimpse into the depths of capitalist globalization, where we see despair, but also hope. When the Inca Trail reopens, be aware of what it means to trek it, what it means for your belongings to be carried on the backs of Quechua porters.